You guys like a lot of bad metal bands, apparently.
We just like.
Is that true?
Well, like, what bad? I don't know.
Reading.
I don't think there's any bad metal bands,
okay,
as far as I'm concerned. They're all good.
Okay. You guys like a lot of metal bands, though?
Yeah, we're a metal band. I kind of.
Yeah, there might be people that.
I mean, I think there's a lot of band, like you listen to a lot of bands that are now, like, you know, alternative or whatever, and you, like, listen to Rat, and you could, like, you know, if this had a different production and they had, like, short hair and, like, dressed like just normal kids, you know, they could be, you know.
Yeah.
Seaweed.
The Seaweed story begins in the late 80s when Aaron Stopher, Clint Werner, John aka Owen Atkins, Wade Neal, and Bob Bulgren were all high school kids and part of the Tacoma and Olympia, Washington music scenes. They all shared an interest in punk rock, and with the exception of Werner, they were all already active in various local bands. Stopher played solo acoustic as Spook and the Zombies and then joined a band called Cactus Love. Atkins and Bulgren were in Alphabet Swill and Delilah, and Wade Neal was in Chapter 12 and Inner Strength. After Cactus Love broke up, Aaron Stopher started a new band with his high school classmates Clint Werner and Kyle Ermatinger. A quote from Aaron Stopher: "Clint and I started Seaweed. Originally, we were both playing guitar. There was a whole year of us just playing with a ton of different people in the band. It might have been even longer than that. We were in Clint's basement. It was tough to find other teenagers with the same kind of commitment. We wanted to practice 3 times a week at that point. We wanted to get serious with this band." So originally Stopher sang and played rhythm guitar, with Werner on lead guitar, and Ermatinger on drums. They practiced and wrote music together while still trying to find other members to fill out the band. Wade Neal eventually joined as a second guitarist, freeing Stopher up to concentrate on vocals. And eventually Bob Bulgren, from the band Alphabet Swill, would replace Ermatinger on drums, after they all met at a Metallica concert. The band would go through 4 bass players before Owen Atkins, Bulgren's former bandmate in Alphabet Swill, joined. "Aaron said he had a new band with Quint and Wade that sounded like the Stooges. I was intrigued," said Atkins. "I'd never played bass before, but I said I could make it work." His first practice with the band was in September of 1989, and it was the first time that he had ever played the bass. "I learned to love it," he says. And so, with the rhythm section of Atkins and Bulgren, the Seaweed lineup was complete. half the band lived in Tacoma, and half the band lived in Olympia. They would drive back and forth, practice, and play shows in either town. Seaweed's early releases were a 4-song EP and a single on Leopard Gecko Records, and then another single on K Records. Let's hear a couple of those early tracks. We're going to hear Inside from the first EP, and then Installing from the Just a Smirk single.
Together now in a
In the summer of 1990, Seaweed went on tour for the first time, sharing a bill with Superchunk. A quote from Aaron Stopher: "Clint and I had just graduated from high school that year, and we were the last two members in the band to do that. We went out that summer with Superchunk because Leopard Gecko had put out a record by Wax, which was Mac from Superchunk's previous band. Anyway, on that tour, towards the end, Twin Tone was at the Minneapolis show and they told us they wanted to sign us. Of course, we loved that label back then, but before we had gone out on that tour, Sub Pop had asked us to put out a 7-inch with them. So we went home and went back to Sub Pop and told them about the Twin Tone deal, but that we would rather be on Sub Pop because they're local. They ended up offering us a deal." Another quote from Stopher: "We could have done Despised with Butch Vig. The label asked us, 'Do you want to go to Wisconsin and record with Butch Vig? Or do you want to go to Reciprocal Studio and record with Jack and Dino?' Seaweed entered the now legendary Reciprocal recording with Jack and Dino to record an EP for Sub Pop. The label decided to tack on some of the songs from the singles and make it a full-length LP called Despised, released by Sub Pop in 1991. Let's hear a song from Despised. This is called Stale. Seaweed worked with Jack and Dino again for their second album, but they went along with Sub Pop's wishes to record in a nicer studio, and recorded it at Bear Creek Studios in Woodinville, Washington. The result is a more polished, punchier album, though Aaron Stopher isn't particularly enamored with it. To him, the album is too fast, and the songs sound too similar. He wasn't a fan of the album's production either. Quote, "We ended up liking the weak demos that Clint recorded in his basement better than the released weak album. The cover photo for Weak was taken at the Capitol Theater in Olympia, Washington, when Seaweed played a show with the Tree People." I disagree with Stopher. I like Weak a lot. Let's hear a couple of songs from the album. Probably my two favorites. We're going to hear Baggage and New Tools.
Much.
Following week, C-Reed released a single with Sub Pop called Measure. They recorded and produced the single themselves in Clint Werner's home studio. Sub Pop loved it, and they gave C-Reed the green light to record their next album themselves in Werner's basement. The next album, which would end up being called 4, was recorded entirely by the band. A quote from Aaron Stopher: "That was the first record we did ourselves. Ken Stringfellow from the Posies was in the studio with me when I was tracking vocals to make sure I was singing in key. But the rest is us. We did it in Clint's basement. That was our third release on Sub Pop, so we got a decent advance from them. So instead of going to some big studio with that money, Clint bought a tape machine for us to use. It was so liberating to record 4 in Clint's basement. No bill, no time limits, and in the friendly confines of Tacoma. I'm super proud of everything about the 4 record. 4 is pretty great. Check out the opening track, Losing Skin." I saw C-Reed live right after 4 came out at the Metro in Chicago, opening for Bad Religion and Green Day. That was October 9th, 1993. It was the second time I saw Green Day. I had seen them previously that summer in Milwaukee. Dookie didn't come out until 4 months later, in February of 1994. 4 would become C-Reed's best-selling album up to that point. It was released right at the time when alternative and grunge and Sub Pop were blowing up nationally, but as Stopher put it, "We were bothered that people lumped us in with Seattle, because Tacoma was its own place." Let's hear a couple more songs from 4. We're going to hear Kid Candy and Wait for the Fade. Seaweed's contract expired with Sub Pop after the release of 4. They had a pretty high profile at the time. Kid Candy had been on MTV and even made it onto Beavis and Butthead, and their cover of Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac was on the Clerks soundtrack. Also, the labels at the time were signing anything alternative, so it's surprising that Sub Pop only made a half-hearted effort to re-sign the band. Sub Pop was doing their own major label deal. It was where their focus was, Stouffer says. With Sub Pop distracted, Seaweed decided it was time to find a new home for their next album. They had no shortage of offers. Major labels like Geffen and Interscope were interested, along with indie heavyweights like Epitaph and Merge. A quote from Aaron Stouffer: "I remember Epitaph was one of the labels that we spoke with. They were better suited for us, but we were tired and dirty, and we just wanted money so maybe we could buy a house, which none of us did anyway. Some of us were pretty stoned at the time, and we weren't really paying attention to the business. We had management, and they were making a lot of the decisions for us." Seaweed ended up going with Hollywood Records. Hollywood would provide money for the band to record, pay their rent. The idea was that being on a major label would provide better marketing and touring opportunities for the band. A quote from Aaron Stouffer: "I feel like signing with Hollywood afforded us a lot of time in the studio, and it was the dream record we all wanted to make. We wanted to make the record on our own, which they agreed to at first, but then changed their minds. What we didn't want was any producer at all. We wanted to self-produce, like we did on 4, and then have Andy Wallace mix it. That was our original plan." Hollywood disagreed, and Andy Wallace ended up producing the album.
It's unlaughable now, no, it's not okay. You knew you were screwing us both over anyway. I wish I could laugh, but my laugh sapped out. Cause I sat alone as you worshipped your wallet, set it up goals or whatever you call it. Start away. Streets.
That was Start With, the first single from Seaweed's major label debut, Spanaway, released in August of 1995. It was at this point that Seaweed went out on the Warp Tour, which at the time also included a couple of bands that would be hugely successful later on, Sublime and No Doubt. A quote from Aaron Stopher, "I remember watching the drummer from Sublime beating the shit out of the singer from Sublime, the singer that died. Our tour manager said to us, 'Stay away from Sublime. They are bad. The kind of bad you guys have never been exposed to.' And then one time I was smoking weed on their bus, and the next thing I know there was some trouble. The drummer jumped out of the bus, and in the alleyway made by two buses, just started beating on the singer. I have no idea what it was about." I remember No Doubt. They played a bunch of shows. Gwen Stefani reminded me of HR. They totally reminded me of Bad Brains when I saw them. It was like a weird surf version of Bad Brains. Let's hear a couple more songs from Spanaway. We're going to hear Crush Us All and Common Mistake. We'll be right back. Spanaway was critically acclaimed, and it became Seaweed's best-selling record, and yet they found themselves lacking support from the label, despite promises that had been made to them by Hollywood. "They were clueless, they didn't know how to sell records," says Stopher. "And when we didn't sell records, they grew frustrated, threw up their hands, really dragged their feet when it came to giving the green light on recording record number 2. By December of 1996, the label had completely stopped paying the band at all. After months of legal wrangling with lawyers, the band was finally released from their Hollywood contract in May of 1997. At this point, drummer Bob Bulgren left the band, eventually to be replaced by Alan Cage from Quicksand. A quote from Aaron Stopher: "We wrote and demoed another album's worth of material, which ended up becoming Actions and Indications. Hollywood didn't like it." So after getting out of the contract with Hollywood Records, Seaweed signed with North Carolina indie Merge. After all of the headaches dealing with Hollywood Records, recording for a smaller label owned by friends was a huge relief. Seaweed's final album, Actions and Indications, was released by Merge in January of 1999. Let's hear a couple of songs from it. We're going to hear Hard Times and Against the Sky.
Thank you.
And yet, for Seaweed, like many bands from this time period, the after effects of the major label experience had crushed the dream. The momentum was gone, as Stouffer put it. Seaweed played a number of shows in Brazil, a few more dates in the US, but that was about it. The Brazil tour was really fun and a great bookend for Seaweed, Stouffer says. They played one last show at the Merge 10-year anniversary and then split up. A quote from Aaron Stouffer, "Clint really wanted to break up. He wanted closure. I didn't feel like we needed to break up. I was already living in Northern California, and it was fun to play shows every so often. I thought it was great. We would play some decent shows. But Clint didn't want to do it anymore. We had been a band for nearly 10 years, and I think we knew it was a good time to wrap it up. I think we accomplished everything we set out to do and much, much more. I was super content with Seaweed's legacy." So after the band split up, the Seaweed guys all went on to do different things. Owen Atkins went back to school, as did Wade Neal, who would become a lawyer. Clint Werner continued to run his own studio, Uptone. Aaron Stouffer also went back to school and became a registered nurse for emergency rooms in California. They also remained active in music. Atkins started a band called The Fucking Eagles. Wade Neal joined a band called To The Waves. After Seaweed, Stouffer formed a short-lived band called Gardener with Van Conner from Screaming Trees, and then a, quote, lounge punk band called The Blue Dot. Seaweed had followed the same path of a lot of bands of their era, a solid indie career, a major label failure, and then a breakup. But 9 years after the breakup, Seaweed announced their return. On May 15th, 2007, it was posted on the band's MySpace page that they were working on a new album, tentatively titled Small Engine Repair. The band started playing shows again, including an appearance at Sub Pop's 20th Anniversary Festival in July of 2008. With new songs and new shows, there seemed to be some real momentum for the band. Unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. Only 3 songs were actually completed. There was not enough creative drive to make a full album, says Stouffer. Owen Atkins agrees. The band, as a whole, really didn't want to put out a new record and go on tour. Other than Wade, the creative drive just wasn't there. We accomplished much more than we ever set out to do. We didn't really have any unfinished business. The reunion was fun, but I doubt we'll ever do it again. A quote from Aaron Stouffer, "Seaweed did play 13 reunion shows during that period. We did shows from 2007 to 2014. That's 13 shows in 6 years. Each show was a long negotiation of whether or not we should play. Clint didn't want to play. To this day, he doesn't think we should have done any reunions." In 2011, Seaweed released a final single featuring 2 new tracks, The Weight and Service Deck. We'll be right back. At this point, I have very little regrets. It's been so long, too long to regret, Stouffer says. I'm proud of Seaweed. Owen Atkins also looks back at his Seaweed years affectionately and is particularly proud of the band's work ethic. Between tours, we were constantly working on songs and recording, and we toured relentlessly. I wouldn't trade the experience for anything. So we're doing these segments where you listen to old records, and I put them at the end of episodes, and I was thinking we should have some kind of a theme song or an introduction for it. And I was thinking it could go something like this. Dan Rock! What do you think?
No.
No? Come on, sing it with me. Dan Rock! Sing it.
Dan Rock! No.
Okay, we're back with the second album in this long journey that we're going to go on in the history of rock and roll. My daughter, who's a member of Generation Z, thought it would be interesting to sit down and listen to albums with her kind of in chronological order, like important historical albums especially, and get her reaction as a member of Generation Z, as a 13-year-old, to this music. So we started off with Revolver by the Beatles, but I felt like that didn't cover the Beatles well enough, so we decided to, or I decided we would listen to another Beatles album before we moved on. So we just listened to Let It Be. So what did you think of the album overall?
A lot of the songs were like more bluesy than Revolver, kind of.
Yeah.
Bluesy isn't a word, but.
Yeah, it is.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. All the two albums are kind of just very different. And also a lot of songs on Let It Be sound like different from each other, and then a lot of songs on Revolver sound kind of the same. Just okay. Like the same like tempo and the same like, yeah.
Right. And you said, before we started recording, you said you liked Revolver more.
Yeah.
Which, that was interesting. But what I realized as we were listening to this is how much better Side 1 is than Side 2 of Let It Be. Personally, for me, I love every song on Side 1. But there's some moments on Side 2 that aren't quite as good. But anyways.
Side 1 was more, like, Beatles-ish. In my opinion, and then Side 2 was kind of more, like, blues and more, like, jazzy and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So for Two of Us, it kind of repeated a lot, and then there was, like, a lot of harmony. And then it had acoustic guitar, which was weird because, like, every song on Revolver had electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And then there was just that song that had a way slower tempo. And also was, like, acoustic guitar and was, like, more soft. And, like, the first song of Revolver, I don't remember.
Taxman.
Yeah, Taxman, was much more, like, loud and stuff. And then this one started out really, like, much, like, quieter. And, yeah. And then for I Dig a Pony,
Did you like Two of Us? Because I love that song.
Yeah, it was.
It's kind of a folk song is what it is.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney wrote that song, and I love it, but it is pretty different from almost anything else.
It's very different the Beatles, from I guess. Revolver, yeah. And then song two, I Dig a Pony. Okay, that's a weird name, but
it that's had John Lennon.
It the, had the, a similar tempo as Two of Us, but it was like stronger, kind of, I guess. And also, did that one have electric guitar?
Yeah.
Yeah, it had electric guitar, so it kind of like switched it around, and it was like more, I guess.
The cat's like, in the litter box. I don't know if the mics are picking that up.
That's great. And it was kind of more like heavy, I guess, because it had like more instruments and was louder. And then Across the Universe, it was more like the songs on Revolver, kind of. And also it was like pretty. And I Dig a Pony was just like kind of loud, but then this one was kind of pretty.
So what was your opinion overall of I Dig a Pony then?
It was kind of boring.
Boring? Okay.
It seems like the loud songs are just more boring to me for some reason.
You like dynamics, I think.
What's that?
Yeah, it's hard to explain.
Okay.
Across the Universe has a lot more dynamics than I Dig a Pony.
And also the like it was more like you could definitely tell in I Dig a Pony when like it was changing from a verse to like a pre-chorus or a chorus, and then in Across the Universe it was like more soft, and like transitions from like verse to pre-chorus or verse to chorus were just like subtle,
mm-hmm,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like more light. And then I Me Mine was slower and more of a minor key, and like at first it was quiet, but then it got like really loud, and then it got quieter again, and it kind of just like repeated that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I Dig a Pony and I Me Mine kind of
similar.
Ew, now
it smells like cat poop.
Me Mine and I Dig a Pony kind of have a similar arrangement where they have a slower verse and then a louder chorus.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Wait. Yeah.
And so I Me Mine is a George Harrison song. Did you notice the difference?
Kind of. Well, wait, are the two songs before that by the same person?
Yeah, I Dig a Pony and Across the Universe are both John Lennon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Let It Be was softer. It's kind of weird because at first, like, the first song on the album was, like, soft, and then the second one was, like, really loud, and then soft again, and then loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And it was also, it was prettier, kind of, like, Across the Universe, and it was in a major key, but it was still, like, sad-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And it started off with less instruments, and gradually there were more instruments. And, yeah. And I've Got a Feeling, he sang Feeling Weird. I don't know why. But it was more upbeat and loud and, like, kind of more messy because there were, like, the instruments were kind of, like, they weren't perfect.
It is messy, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Beatles songs are kind of, like, the parts are kind of perfect, but then this one was kind of a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, it's kind of the way they made this album. They were all jamming together in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more what that song is.
Yeah. And it was more blues-like, like a lot more blues-like than... Because I think that was the first song on the second side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. And then One After 909 sounds a lot like I've Got a Feeling. And it's more blues-like. And it's boring. And there were more instruments than most songs on the album, kind of.
Yeah, I don't even like One After 909. But One After 909 is a very generic, early rock and roll type song. Because that's one of their early songs that they wrote.
And then The Long and Winding Road had an orchestra in it, which was interesting. And, like, I mean, it didn't really make the song louder, but it kind of just... It made it seem a little bit more put together, but also kind of like a lot of extra instruments that maybe didn't need to be there.
Yeah, I told you that Phil Spector,
who
was a famous producer from the 60s, he came in and he added that, and Paul McCartney didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I kind of see why, but then
Phil Spector right now is in prison for shooting a woman in his house, which
okay.
I think he claimed it was an accident, but he's in prison. But I want to show you a picture of Phil Spector.
How do you shoot someone by accident?
I want to show you a picture of Phil Spector when he was in court, when he was on trial.
Oh.
That's the guy who added the orchestra to the song. Let's pause a second.
That's an interesting hairdo. But also, it was sadder, kind of, and it was slower. And, yeah.
Very similar to Let It Be, right? But yeah. I think Let It Be is a better song, but I like both.
I don't know if it was that. I mean, I guess it was kind of similar, like, melody-wise and stuff. And then For You Blue had a sliding guitar, which none of the other songs had sliding guitar. Except for then, I think Get Back does, but that's later, I think. Maybe not,
yeah, actually. Get Back might. I don't know.
And it's kind of sad, but, like, happy at
time. Oh, yeah, there's some slide guitar in that. Mm-hmm.
And it had weird instrumental parts. It was still, like, the same instruments, but, like, weird, like, melodies or, like, a weird way of playing it.
Yeah.
And also it was bluesy, but it was also, like, jazzy, and it was just weird, kind of.
Yeah.
It was, like, a normal song, but then, like, a small percentage of it was just weird. And then Get Back was kind of loud, and it was still bluesy, and kind like all the songs on the second side kind of sound similar. And it wasn't, like, very happy, but it wasn't sad, and it sounded a lot... Oh, yeah, I just wrote, sounds a lot like all the other bluesy songs. And Don't Let Me Down was slow but still loud. Like, a lot of the songs that are slow aren't loud at all, and they're, like, more of the quiet songs. But then Don't Let Me Down was slow, but it was still loud. And it kind of gradually gets louder, and it's repetitive. And I noticed that a lot of the songs on Revolver are like, more repetitive. But then on this song, not so much, I guess. I mean, they still had, like, the same song structure, but it was, like, less repetitive, I guess.
Yeah, and Don't Let Me Down wasn't actually on the album, but yeah, we played that one because it was recorded at the same time, and I personally love that song. But so what do you think of this kind of music overall that this record was?
Like, do you mean, like, just the era of music?
Yeah, and this kind of music. You know, it's guitar based, which there's not much guitar at all in your favorite stuff.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the songs that don't sound like the Beatles songs are just kind of, like, there, and they're kind of just, like, boring. But then the songs that actually sound like they do are interesting. But then, I don't know.
Do you remember your favorite song from Revolver?
No. Wait, let me actually... I can just look in the...
No, I remember. You said it was For No One.
Oh.
That was your favorite.
Also the one... I don't know what it's called, but it says Father McKenzie or
Eleanor
something.
Rigby. Yeah.
Yeah. Both of those are my favorites on that album.
Those are both Paul McCartney. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite on this album?
The universe one. Across the universe.
And that's, yeah, John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
It probably is the most memorable song on the album.
Hmm.
Right?
Maybe.
It's the most different
and
interesting song.
It's definitely
probably
the most different on the album. Because, yeah, like, just the way he sings it is different than all the other songs, too. But.
Oh, that's an amazing song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the end of the 60s. And so going into the 70s, a lot of people are going to take a lot of influence from some of the stuff on this album.
Yeah.
And 70s rock is going to be a lot different than 60s rock was.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is 70, but still, it's not like...
Well, it was recorded in the 60s, but yeah,
oh,
this
yeah
came out in 1970, right?
Mm-hmm. And also, it was recorded 4 years after Revolver, but it's still really different from Revolver, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, we were looking at what happened in the 4 years between Revolver and this album with Sgt. Pepper's and Magical Mystery Tour and the White Album, and they did a lot in that short period of time between these two.
With the Sgt. Pepper's thing, didn't they wear like weird costumes or something?
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing like a cover band thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went and saw the Beatles cover band in Illinois. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think you'll ever want to listen to these albums again or listen to more Beatles? Does this make you interested in listening to more stuff by the Beatles? I mean, I know you know a lot of other Beatles songs, but...
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, are you ready to keep going? I think we'll move on next to the Rolling Stones. We'll listen to a Rolling Stones album. I don't know how that's going to go. And then we'll go from there. Okay. All right, thanks.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Across the universe, thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Change my world. Nothing's gonna
be back.